Radio Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Radio Rewind. The following content has previously aired on CJSF. But don't worry, we'll be back next week with fresh content. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse, independent, yours.
Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Makassa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you.
Hi, good morning, and welcome to Speak Up, Listen Up, Act Upon on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. Producer Jesse here. Your usual host, Sister C, is away this week, so I am presenting to you a remix of two previous interviews done by the one and only Sister C. First will be her interview with Valerie Walker McPherson, and then after that you'll hear an excerpt of her interview with Cynthia Sharp. Two great conversations, both worth revisiting, lots of interesting ideas and takeaways to pull out from there. So without further ado, let's get into that first interview with Valerie Walker McPherson.
This morning I have a treat for you. I have Valerie D. Walker McPherson, a legend in Canada, artist, writer, speaker, and part of the event organizer. So this morning, Valerie, it's been a while since we've heard it, so you might want to bring an update on you and what you're doing, and then we'll talk about the big event happening tomorrow.
Oh, I'll do just a quick update on me since my work was shown at the Vancouver Art Gallery. I've had a number of shows at Evergreen Art Center and at Queer Arts Center's Some Gallery. And at Gallery Gachet, it was really great to have all those great experiences with the different curators and the public, and doing lots of Indigo Griot stuff.
Sorry. And I was fascinated at the fact that you make fabric. I saw your exhibition of fabrics.
I don't actually make the fabric. I put patterns into the fabric with natural dyes, especially indigo.
Yes, yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah. I do some jacquard weaving, but not that much. It's hard to get a jacquard loom nowadays. It's a computerized loom that you can control every thread individually as you weave by hand.
Well, that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. Well, our next step, we're going to be adding sometimes a CJSF, a video when people launch something. We have a space at 312 Main downtown. And so we can do a little video of you making, making fabric through the computer.
Yeah, we can do that. Yeah.
Now, the big thing, now we're recording on Wednesday. People will hear this on Friday. So it'll be a day past emancipation, but we'll be playing it over at other times because some people, like today, they said, oh, I thought you already had that. They have it confused with Juneteenth. So could you tell us a bit more about the difference and what this holiday is about?
Okay, this holiday is Emancipation Day, which is a real Canadian holiday. It is actually August 1st, and it marks the actual end, the day that in 1834, the Slavery Abolition Act came into existence across the entire British Empire, which now we talk about the United Kingdom Commonwealth. It's the same thing. All across the United Kingdom, there was slavery, and until Queen Victoria signed the Slavery Abolition Act in 1833, which took a year to come into effect, on August 1st, 1834, there was a slow progress of freedom. Juneteenth is in the States. It's in the state of Texas in particular. And what that is a reminder that the slave owners of Texas kept us in slavery for another 2.5 years until the U.S. military came to Texas and forcibly freed the slaves that the Texas slave owners were holding. In the Commonwealth, there was a slow progress of the elimination of slavery. So even though there were over almost around a million people held in slavery in 1833, it took quite a few years for slavery to actually end. And it's because people had to work off some imaginary debt that our free labor and slavery still owed the slave owners. So it was actually only children that were freed in 1834. And then in the next 5 years, adults worked off some imaginary debt that their decades of slavery had not yet paid off. And then they were free. The other thing that happened in 1834, it became illegal to bring in enslaved Africans, which is actually very important. And today, or August 1st, this will be the 190th year that we have been free of slavery in the United Kingdom and Canada. So I've been on the City of Vancouver African Diasporic Committee and a number of other committees dealing with our diasporic existence in an artistic and social way. And I was able to, I'm just going to get some info. I was approached by Mix Bukuru, mother of the House of Bukuru, and Kira Filbert, who's a scholar and a nurse who works a lot with equity, especially racial equity in nursing. And we came together and inspired each other to form the Emancipation Day Committee, which we now are having the very first Emancipation Day party in BC. And Emily Carr University is graciously hosting the event. We are going to have a variety of performers from the House of Bukuru. We are going to have, I'm looking up their names, Mix Bukuru, of course, the mother of the house, and Batty Banks, Acacia Gray, and Imbali are all going to perform. And it's very important that they come and donate. We're actually paying them. They wanted to donate their wonderful performances, but we were able to get some sponsors because we just can't allow Black, queer people to keep donating their time like I am doing for this event,
right.
As Kira and Mix have done throughout. We are paying them. We're really happy that we can offer them an honorarium for their performances. And House Bukuru is the only Black, transgender, non-conforming drag ballroom house in the city. So we're so happy that they've joined with us. And Hogan's Alley Society is also offering us sponsorship. And members of Hogan's Alley will be performing creative storytelling and helping us during the event. Yeah. So we're creating a couple of performance spaces for drag and for poetry. I'm just looking at the set list so I can tell you. We have a few celebrity guests that I won't say anything more about, except you're going to wish you were there to see them. And we'll have snacks. We'll have nice snacks to eat. We'll have some elbow patties for people who get there early enough. And we will have a lot of great people sharing time together, relaxing, looking at art, talking. We have a bunch of different books for people to look at. Seventh generation historical Black Canadian Adina Sumter Freetag may be there. Maybe there, surprise, surprise, reading some of her poetry, and maybe something from her play, Stay Black and Die.
Wow. That's an accomplishment.
Thank you. It really is. I feel this huge load starting to lift off of me as I write my presentation, which is going to be about Emancipation Day. Yes.
Wonderful. What time are you doing your presentation?
The presentations are going to start around 2:30. 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have the openings, invite people in at 2. There'll be some snacks. People can take a look at the art, hang out, get to meet each other. And then around 2, we'll start with a welcome by Rainbow Glitz, a African indigenous queer Squamish and Musqueam artist. I'm looking up their names as I'm talking to you. So this is really good because it's really important to talk about the fact that Black and Indigenous people went hand in hand through this colonizer project, and that there are many Black Indigenous people, especially in BC. And it's a great honor to have them here talking and sharing with us.
Oh, the things, it's a step toward connecting Indigenous people with the States, because there are a lot of things that pertain to only Canada, and people don't understand that something, you know, very similar happened with people put in schools where they were forced to learn English. A lot of families had like within my family, back three generations, there were people living together. There were Indigenous people who hid, who worked together, who did projects together. And it's not covered in our history books. So I think these events give an opportunity for people to meet each other. And then also to raise the question, when some people have migrated or have become citizens or permanent residents here, to investigate the other things they're entitled to, because there were people, as you know, people, mm-hmm. when slavery was over, there were people coming up into the States, kidnapping free people and taking them back down to Texas. And it wasn't that Texas could not hear. I thought about, they used to say it took 2 years to go across the country on a horse. And I said, there are people, there are runners that run across the country in a whole year. So that is just something they made up.
Oh, yes. They knew. They knew exactly what was going on. That's why they denied us the ability to read back then also.
But I think it's exciting having all of these performers and a new beginning, because there are different times that it seems to be a start to connections of our histories. And then we don't get it again to the next year. Each group has got something celebrating emancipation. So I salute you and all of what you brought together, and say to the audience, really don't just let it be a day. You know, visit, look at the displays, get people's cards, and incorporate that in school programs, church meetings, dances, everywhere that is possible to include it. Speak up, my show is called Speak Up, Listen Up, and Act Upon What You've Heard. Act upon what you hear at the mm-hmm. event.
And act differently, act better and wiser. Yes. Yeah, kinder too. It's important. So this will be really great. And we're doing a lot to bring together Black and Indigenous people and artists to help realize we're all riding the same boat in this colonizer project journey that they've taken us on. And it's time for us to make our own path and our own space and unite together. That's really important.
Yeah. Are there any new spaces, or is Emily Carr going to increase displays or resources in their libraries based on East Valley?
I'm sure once they hear this, they will. We have lots of information. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to put it out there in, a, like you say, a continuous way, so that in the darkest, shortest month of winter, we don't get surprised by Black history information. We can actually share Black knowledge and Black history and create new futurosity, new Afrofuturism from everything we've learned and shared and unpacked together, discussing it together. Yeah.
Around Afrofuturism, what are some things that you've seen that have been different in the writing that people have done that express Afro? What would you define as Afrofuturism?
I've been involved in Afrofuturism for decades, I would say. I know Yatasha Womack, who wrote the book Afrofuturism. She's a fantastic writer and theorist and promoter of Afrofuturism, which is a way to reimagine the future in a positive way, taking everything that we know and don't know, mm-hmm. and relearning and recombining things and realizing that we do have a lot of technology. I mean, as an Indigo Griot, I know that my ancestors were stolen because of their technological knowledge. They knew about Indigo dying and they were stolen for that knowledge. So we think that we were just random bodies, but we were actually geniuses and creators and magicians. and we were taken and forced to do magic in a strange land. And now we've made that land, if you think about it. I know for people who've watched the 1619 Project in video or read the book, we built this country, we built this continent, and we are very deeply connected to it. It's part of our place now. It's where we're from. So Afrofuturism comes from that, that we have a new place and a new story, and the story continues with us and what we do with our works.
I think intergenerationally, it's encouraging to see that people are saying, oh, it's worth it to find out what happened within our family. It's worth it to really, more people are generating a family history. Mm-hmm. I knew when I was a child that my grandfather's legs, they bowed. And then later found it was lead poisoning. But he was a typesetter when type was manually set. So I thought The intelligence, all of the things that had to go into that, and how much they profited by having him and other people who did that. But I think that it's now I'm digging up things that relatives and parsons, other parts of the country that are having reunions and having time storytelling and so forth, because things that were just said as a word, like typesetter or printer or journeyman, you know, we navigated the seas. So I think that, you know, this is helping to just open up the box for people being curious and sharing. The intergenerational sharing is really important.
It is. It's very important. It's also good to look at how different transportation systems were built by us that no longer really exist, like the trains, for example.
Yes.
We were prime force, not only building, but also working on and continuing the services of the train. And now people don't even know what a porter is. They think that's a myth, the black porters who smuggled people and money and things on the trains. But that was actually a secret network of people.
And interesting, you know, that during Black History Month, we had the series, The Porters, but we still haven't got to the series about the mechanics and the people mm-hmm. who laid out the railroad.
That's right. The assistant conductors, because we weren't allowed to be full conductors. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. It's very important to go back and realize what we know is just the little bit of the iceberg on top of the water. There's a huge amount underneath that's hidden from us that we have to research and find. We have to talk to each other. We have to dig into archives and figure out why information is missing and what is that information.
And that's why I think it's so valuable in the program that we have dancers, poets, storytellers, researchers, because it is a lot of story. And some people receive things through a song. Other people receive things through a play. So you use the word diaspora. Do you find people understand when you talk about the African diaspora?
I'm not really sure. If they don't know, I wish they would ask me, because the African diaspora was a forced journey. We are on this journey still because we were taken from somewhere and learned how to be ourselves in a new place. And we're part of that new place, but we also still have this connection across the seas to another place that we've never been to. Maybe some of us have, but in our hearts, it's still there. And it's still a part of how people treat us, which is very interesting when you think about all the weird ways people treat people through racism.
Yes.
How many of those people actually ever went to Africa and realized what a great collection of civilizations is there?
Right. People have been talking about the news and how they spend a lot of time telling us about the wars. So many discouraging things. U.S. and here, discouraging Black people to go to Africa. And going over there, from Rwanda, getting to know that during the COVID pandemic, people had phones out in the countryside. They said one of the reasons that the virus was not so bad because people could communicate with each other about phones and talk about preventive matters, talk about prevention, but also talk about ways that they could do things differently.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't hear about it. I mean, the news never, that when they say Africa, it's A generation is going to be missing, or whatever. They don't tell you that there are robots, and some hospitals are using robots to move materials from one area to the other. Robots? Africa? So I think, how do
There
you
is
think?
a lot of real progress in Africa, and a lot of people doing things that we can't even imagine doing here with all the things we have. They do so much with just the few things available to them in some places. Yeah, it's very important. And African art is starting to get more of a vision, and we're seeing the connections of artists here in the diaspora connecting through time and place with African motifs and themes. We do have some visual artists, Simone and Zulima, who will be presenting visual art. I'll have some of my art there. So I think it'll be a very nice mix of things, and it's a very open, large space, so people can just sit down and just watch what they want to watch and read a book if they want
Now, I know Emily Carr has some innovative programs, and they've had some wonderful, but do you see now with this happening that they might be opening up other display spaces, research spaces? Do you see anything like that happening?
I hope so, as the community reaches out to faculty like myself who are there, and students get engaged and decide to present things. We do have quite an active student body that presents events. We definitely need more Black students and Black faculty, as do most of the universities in Canada. So that'll be good to see. Yes, and I think it's a good step forward that Emily Carr has offered us this support of space and a little bit of financing to make sure that we have enough money to pay some of the artists. And I think it's a good equity, diversity, and inclusion effort on their part to reach out to the community and support us in this kind of unexpected way. I mean, most people don't even realize August 1st is Emancipation Day, and that's an actual legitimate Canadian holiday. Instead, we get all these random Monday provincial holidays. But really, everybody who's taking off this weekend, you're taking Emancipation Day weekend off.
Right,
Remember
but I know in Toronto, it's Caravana. It was Caravana weekend. I never heard Emancipation Day associated with it. In 10 years that I was living there, it was a
that.
big celebration of Caravana, but not the anyone speaking about the connection to emancipation, connection to even between the provinces. I think there's a lot of opportunity for people to work between the provinces to honor the artists and help people understand what they're building upon,
I think so. I know that they did have an emancipation recognition on Wednesday, but not on Emancipation Day last week. And it was just a small ceremony with a plaque in Toronto, celebration of Emancipation Day. But I think we do need to start, this is part of that, is starting an outreach across the entire country, province by province. We need to have a nationwide celebration on August 1st, that continues into this holiday weekend.
I think celebration and education, and then branching over to when we get to each of the other holidays, Black History Month. I can't
Yeah,
think of the others,
I
but
think
with that
every,
and Juneteenth, but just
yeah.
connecting. I think that there have been some students. I interviewed some students who went back to their school and they were talking about the curriculum. They're challenging some school boards that the curriculum needs to be updated. Do you know
That's
anything about that?
sadly no, but it's definitely necessary. I know it's necessary. I know we
I think
don't get enough information about ourselves, that's for sure.
I think people have talked about well, one group of young people that I know went to a school and they looked at the materials that they had for Black History Month, but they brought their own. And they had poetry. They had Who Am I? Play the game, Who Am I? Where people could stretch beyond what they knew from what was in the little bit that was in the book and the greater amount that was in a place, such as the resources that you're saying Emily Carr might have in other schools. I think we might challenge different universities that if you have a collection of African art, African history, early Canadian history, the people that came over and built cities. We should really be pressing university scholars to put those into archives so people could read about it and not just think, oh, that was a long time ago. And people got here. What's the one story they tell? The British promised people who fought on their side in America that they would take them to Africa, but they didn't take them all the way to Africa. They took them to Newfoundland.
They actually took them to Dartmouth. They actually took them to Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, and dropped them off there.
Right.
Yeah. Most people who came up from the States thinking that they had helped their British masters in an attempt to get back to Africa were dropped off in Nova Scotia in the middle of winter with no coats.
Nothing, right.
Right, nothing. And they still, if you go there, you can still go to some of these settlement villages that are still denied funding for adequate sewers, lights, and sidewalks. It's definitely a setback. It's still a great setback that people are forced to live like that there.
Yeah, so I think that with the pomp and circumstance we have of holidays, it gives us then a jolt of energy to look at what are things that we can advocate for and how can we, through, among organizations, advocate for these changes, because otherwise it just comes as a page in a book. The people were dropped off. The people were promised support. They were supposed to go to Liberia. They were supposed to be taken to Sierra Leone, but they didn't take them. But end of the story, so those of you who don't know, my show is my guest and I speak up so you can listen up and act upon what you hear.
Please do. Act kindly and act with knowledge. Yes. It's our turn. It's our time to really change the world for the better. Mm-hmm. And this is my little effort to do that with art-based education, excitement, and real love of the fact that we have a holiday. We need to celebrate it. And I'm so glad it's a summer holiday, not a winter holiday.
Yes, yes, yes. again, so people who might have missed it at the beginning or tune in now, would you again tell us the people that are involved, along with your brilliance in making this holiday celebration come through?
I'm Valerie D. Walker McPherson. I'm part of the Emancipation Day Committee, which is celebrating Emancipation Day August 1st at Emily Carr University in the IMS Interactive Media Studio at the east end of the campus. It's a fantastic space, and I'm so lucky that Kira Filbert and Meeks Bukuru of House Bukuru have joined the committee with me and are the organizing engines and inspiration that have kept me rolling to organize this art party to celebrate this super important federal holiday, Emancipation Day, the day that slavery was ended in the UK Commonwealth in 1834.
Is there a website or a place people can go for more information?
They can go to Instagram. It's emancipation__190. Or they can look for House, HOUS, Bukuru, BUKURU, also on Instagram. And we have info also on my Instagram page, IndigoVDW. And we'll have more information on site for about Emancipation Day. But because this is an all-volunteer committee, we were so involved in getting it going. We have no real funds for a website yet, but we're hoping in the future. Like, this is the first Emancipation Day. This is 190. 200 needs to be across the country and huge celebration. So we've got 10 years. We're going to make it happen.
Wonderful.
So I really want to thank.
Are there displays and so forth that will be up for the week? Are there any things that people will see beyond the weekend?
No, you got one day to come and celebrate. It's like freedom. You got to get through that gate in one day or they lock you back in.
Well, people who attend who have heard about it, you might want to send a letter thanking Emily Carr University for having this, but encouraging them to keep some space, some hold some spaces where these displays can be permanent. And
Yes.
people who are in the school or people who hear about the institute can come by and see it. It's a lot of work to just go back into boxes or cupboards or individuals' homes.
Yes. And you will be able to see members of House Bukuru at Vancouver Pride because there is a black stage that weekend. I'm just trying to see where it is. On Davie Street. So they're coming in between performances.